we successfully settled that case in 2010, giving, again, some measure of justice to those victims. But the fact of a criminal prosecution is often what plaintiffs want to see. They would like to see someone punished for what happened to them. And in this case, again, you know, we welcome the fact that the Department of Justice pressed forward with this case, but we are thinking that it's also missing some pieces here where you don't see the corporation itself included, you don't see the founder, Eric Prince, included. But yes, the fact that the conviction of the shooters could signal that some of the individual perpetrators may be prosecuted. But again, as you mentioned, the use of contractors by the United States is at an all-time high level where we have contractors who are doing intelligence analysis, deciding where we go to war, providing the means to go to war, providing sometimes the people who will engage, maybe not in pulling the trigger, but in supporting that war effort in ways that historically did not happen. And the possibility to commit serious human rights violations, violations of the laws of war, is great. So we need to have more enforcement of the existing criminal laws, the anti-torture statute, the war crime statute, as well as greater ease to civil remedies for victims and their families of these harms.
We've been speaking with Catherine Gallagher of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Find their work online at ccrjustice.org. Thank you very much, Catherine Gallagher, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Good evening, Portland. The time is now 6:01, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. You can also listen to us in Hood River at K220HR and Philomath at K282BH. Have a great evening. Up next is Bread and Roses.
Oh, I got a home. I was rambling around.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sex Workers film series hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film A Kiss for Gabriella will be shown Tuesday, April 21st at 7 p.m. Gabriella Lita is the first sex worker to run for Brazilian Congress. A Kiss for Gabriella tells the story of her 2010 campaign as she faces 822 opponents and challenges a male-dominated political system to see if a sex worker, activist, wife, mother, and cultural icon can beat the odds and win the election. Again, that's A Kiss for Gabriella, Tuesday, April 21st at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill-off's gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing, bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm Mary Postaway.
And I'm Delphine Crescenzo. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity, globally and locally, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. Yes, we do. We always welcome new collective members, no experience necessary. To find out more, you can contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator. Her email is volunteer@kboo.org.
You can like us, like Bread and Roses on Facebook to get updates and behind-the-scenes photos. Find us at KBOO Bread and Roses. You can also find us at the web, on the web at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses to listen to past shows and leave us comments and suggestions. Tonight we have a conversation about homeless leadership and activism with two freelance homeless advocates, Art and Shasta. We're going to talk about their different approach to supporting the homeless community and the importance of fostering strong and genuine community ties.
Art and Shasta will explain their role as freelance homeless advocates, and they will share their assessment of the options available for the homeless community in Portland. They will also introduce us to ways to ensure that homeless community is part of planning solutions. So let me introduce you to Art first, Art Senior. Art, he's been an advocate for 30 plus years in Washington, California, Arizona, and here in Oregon for the past 15 years. He was employed with Sisters of the Road, and over the years, he's been involved with many other groups such as Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive, Anonymous, Frontline Network, and the list goes on and on. Art recently became the chair of the Health Services Advisory Council at Central City Concern, Old Town Clinic, and he is a board member on Central City Concern regular board as well. He's part of the discussion held by the coordinating committee to end homelessness, and he is hoping to join the coordinating board also. Art has been on the Homes for Everyone's coordinating board since October of 2014. As a community member, he's so much on his bio here. But something that Art really likes to let people know is that he has protested against the last three mayors of Portland, Vera Katz, Tom Potter, and Sam Adams. And his message was always the same. City Hall is and will always be the safest place for a homeless person to rest and have a safe night of sleep.
We're also joined by Shasta. Shasta's been an advocate for about 10 years in different states, Texas, Colorado, and Oregon, to name a few. She's also gone to California to support Homeless Bill of Rights with Sisters of the Road and met up with folks from the Western Regional Advocacy Project. She's worked with the downtown metro homeless area community very closely and has contributed a lot when she stayed at Right to Dream 2. Shasta has participated in the annual Pitch a Tent event 3 years in a row and will again this year. Over the last 2 years, she has worked for a couple women and family shelters. Her role is to find resources, services, and anything that can help families bring stress levels down from being on the streets, doubling up, or living in their car. Shasta plans to further her education by taking a peer wellness specialist training in the near future. Welcome, both of you, to Bread and Roses.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. Yeah. Well, let's start with what is the definition, according to you, of freelance homeless advocate? That's a term that you use to describe yourself. Shasta?
What it means to me is that I am not with any agency. I am with myself. Freelance means I'm just my own individuality. Mm-hmm. So I don't tie ends with any social agency. I'm just my own individual person.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I look at it as the possibility of my own freedom of speech, my own time to be able to sit with somebody and find them things that they need without going through a lot of red tape or standing in lines that the hurry up and wait concept, you know, hurry up, do this, but you'll have to wait. I look at it that I don't have any policy or procedure that I have to follow by, you know. I can meet them on my time or their time. I don't have to say it's 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the issues around, you know, maybe representing an agency or being affiliated with an agency? Well, what are some of the limitations, I should say?
I feel that when you are employed by an agency, you have to follow certain policies and procedures, like I said. So you're tied down to their goals, their missions, their mm-hmm. overall, you know, activities of how to help somebody. For me, it's easy enough to do things on my own. I don't have to follow a policy. I don't have to follow a procedure. But it sometimes gets in the way. But making enough friends mm-hmm. within different organizations, I know what I can and can't ask. And I do respect them on that basis as well, because they have to follow theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good.
Okay. So how is it that you guys advocate for folks? What is it that you do?
We do many of things. We have resources that we're able to utilize our access, but it's mostly listening, taking the time to listen to them, to see what they need, to see what we are able to access and help them with. It's the bonding type of thing that I like to do, is I want to make sure that they're comfortable with me instead of sending them to a social agency so they tell the stories multiple times. Mm. So I build the relationship with them, and then I go with them, and then I can advocate for them.
Mm-hmm. So they don't have to tell their story again and again.
Over and over, right.
Correct, mm-hmm. but it's hard, because no matter what social service agency you go to, you're going to have to repeat that story. And if I walk with them and they don't feel comfortable, then I can advocate for them and understand them and help them, mm-hmm. even though they have to repeat themselves millions of times.
Give them that backbone.
Correct.
Strength. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And sometimes it's also where we have had folks come to us with some that didn't know how to read or write. Mm-hmm. So they need certain applications filled out. We have no problem putting our name on the bottom saying that we help said person to take some of that stress off, because you don't find too many agencies that do it. Little by little, now there's agencies out there that will help you get your medical paperwork, mm-hmm. your social security paperwork, but it's just been enough to where, you know, it, like Shasta said, it's building that bond with that person, as we spoke before about authentic relationships with mm-hmm. People. And I think it also puts a little different spin, because, you know, we've experienced homelessness just as they have and gone through some of these processes, and just maybe give them a little, you know, heads up and say, hey, maybe this organization might not work right now, but may work later in your process.
Mm-hmm. And I'd be curious if you can talk more a little bit about the relationships that you build, and how do you get to build those authentic relationship and that bond, and why is that so crucial? As you say, you also experience homelessness. What was it that didn't work for you, and why you're approaching that this way?
How I build the bond with them. I just basically take time out of my day, yeah. whether if it's meetings or I'm at work, I make sure that I'm here to listen and to help them with whatever they need, whether it's by text message, via telephone, emails, or meeting up with them. We may not be able to help them right then and there, but I still meet them weekly at a place to where I'm able to be consistent and build that relationship. If I show up on time, they'll show up on time. If I show them that I'm here, then they're going to start showing me that they need this and they want this, and I'm able to help them.
Mm. Yeah. So when did you decide to become a freelance homeless advocate? And tell us a little bit about how you became that, what it is in your journey that made you to do this.
For me, I just felt that being more freelance with somebody was, you know, more freedom of speech, being able for them to find their own voice, to guide them and say, hey, no, this is what I really need. This is what I really want. I need help. And it was enough to like have that bonding that turned into asking, that turned into them doing it themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was enough to be, I'm going to give you all kinds of free information. You're going to now take it to the next person because you're going to help somebody. And they just became a freelance homeless advocate.
Themselves.
And mm-hmm. it just keeps growing and growing and growing. I don't have to have, a master of social work to know that, you know, $80,000 for 4 to 5 years of school where they haven't really experienced homelessness on the streets. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is come out and just be able to sit down and talk to somebody. And they just became a homeless advocate themselves because they want to be part of some solutions, not some problems. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine that you have this degree that you can be here, but then you get stuck. Like I said, you get stuck behind those standards, those policies, those procedures, and then you're stuck in this big mission statement of saying, this is what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And my mission statement is a freelance homeless advocate.
So, right. And you know, I think also what's so interesting with you know, education is that there's also a language, you know, that comes with it. And I heard Shasta talk about listening. And I heard you talk also about, like, you know, being able to listen and to hear what people are saying. If, you know, you come from a world where, you know, maybe you're not very fluent in that language that the folks you're working with, you know, are speaking, then how can you comprehend what they need?
It just depends, you know. They say some folks that are on the streets or uneducated are degenerates or thieves or mm-hmm. drug addicts, and they're not, you know. Mm-hmm. I try to teach people every day or in a meeting, and to get people to understand we're still putting numbers, we're still putting data, we're still putting, you know, all this different stuff on a human being.
Yeah.
They're human beings. Talk to them like a human being. It may not be that they're well educated, but speak to them well enough to where they will understand and be able to say, hey, yes, this is me. This is how I comprehend. I may have a mental issue. I have a mental issue, so it's easy enough mm-hmm. to understand and say, hey, I need to slow down. Let's talk. You know, let's work things out together. You know, mm-hmm. it's whoever you pass.
Mm-hmm. And what put you on that journey of becoming the advocate and then passing it on?
Well, I wasn't going to talk about it, but I look at it this way, that when I was younger, my mom used to bring a lot of strippers and hookers, and she worked for an adult bookstore. And every time they'd come to the house, I was about 7, 8 years old. And it was to where I thought I had all these new aunts and nieces and nephews and cousins and stuff. And I didn't know until later what my mom's work was. And that was helping, you know, women that were in domestic violence situations mm-hmm. or needed a safe place to be for the night or safety for the kids. It wasn't really until then that I knew, like, what my mom did. But I found out my dad did a couple things. I found out my grandfather did a couple things. And it just had worked from there. And when I finally went homeless myself on getting out of jail and prison, it was the same thing. I hit the streets running. I got high. I stopped. I looked at things. And since Bear Cats, protesting with Bear Cats, it's always been the same thing. As the women's warming shelter, always looked at a year-long shelter for women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just remembering the work my mom did. Mm-hmm. So now I still sit there and see it happening. And the ideal has come up this year. It looks like we are going to have a year-long shelter for women. Mm-hmm. It's taken a long time. And
get applaud to that.
You know, I get that little applaud. But, you know, also at the same time, the city officials look at it and, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm going to go after Dan Salzman like I always do, that, you know, I brought an idea to him over 3 years ago, and now all of a sudden it's finally happening, but still there's a lot of women still out on the streets, and it just kills me, like, why aren't we doing something better?
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk in a little bit with Shasta about really the issues, the different boundaries that women are very much facing. I'm curious, Shasta, also by you, was that something that you grew up being an advocate? Something that you grew into?
I realized this about 10 years ago when I've experienced the situations. I noticed that in many states that I went to, that there are single women and families that are on the streets, and I became intrigued by it. I wanted to know why, how I can help them, even though I was homeless at that state. I wanted to know all the ins and outs. What can I do to help them to feel safe? Because I was in that situation, and for me to advocate or for me to help them, I have to know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have a mental illness also, which I suffer every day, but the more and more that I'm out here and more that I'm learning, I can teach others and to help them to my best ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what a tremendous work you are doing. And I'm also curious as well, because Mary, you are a community health worker, which I think, you know, to a certain degree, is very similar to what the homeless, freelance homeless advocate do here. And I wonder, you know, do we really need these terms? Because your mom was one as well.
Right.
You know, it sounds like Art's mom was already a community health worker. It sounds like, you know, so much is happening behind the scene. But, you know, it's only whenever we give it words and names and titles that people start paying attention. So,
yeah, that's really unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're listening to Brown Roses. We're going to take a short musical break. We have Shasta and Art in the studio with us tonight. They are freelance homeless advocates, and they are sharing with us a little bit the insight of the work that they do, how they do it, and why they do it. We're going to listen to Pharrell Williams. This is Happy. We'll be back in just a minute.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do. Here come bad news talking this and that.
This is Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo.
And I'm Mary Postwick.
And we have Art and Shasta in the studio with us talking about homeless leadership tonight.
So talk about how much homelessness costs to the society as opposed to how much it would cost to house everybody.
Big question.
Big question. Big question of the night, folks.
Yes.
There has been some study that was done, and they had figured out that it costs about $1,600 per visit in an emergency room. Mm-hmm. If you figure that the average is about $62 a night in a hotel room for somebody that may be getting out of the hospital, what's going to be more efficient? I think the $62 for 30 days for someone getting out of the hospital, or some of the organizations also out there opening up subsidy housing for medical use, mm-hmm. like some folks have the respite care, or a couple of the other buildings have it where they put medical rooms where people have it to get healthy over a 3 to 6 month max period of what I've heard. But I've heard that some of that funding has gone down. So really, to look at the big cost is, let's look at what the city says today with that $30 million surplus. we're going to, you got me started now.
We had a nice little conversation about that, huh?
Yeah,
Portland Tribune today. What should Portland do with $30 million?
And I think with that $30 million is that we need to start taking some of that money. And one of the biggest things here was Dan Saltzman talking about $5 million to help within some housing fund and retention possible money. Well, I think still $5 million is not enough. I'd say $10 million of it and give the rest to the firefighters to mm-hmm. save the firefighters, because there's always something happening. Those two are the biggest things. They always want to fix a road, or they mm-hmm. want to fix some medium, or they want to fix the parks. I mean, come on, a building, come on. Really, yes, we know it houses a bunch of people that work there, like, take their money. Oh, wait, you do. That's how we got to this $30 million. But I just look at it that that question there is one of the biggest issues that nobody really can answer without a lot of data. I mean, we could go probably to the Portland Housing Bureau, have this sit around a second time with a lot of that data and answer that question. But still, we know there's still not enough housing. There's still not enough transitional housing, or even shelter. Hmm. You know, as we talk about, year-long shelter for women, and women being on the street still, or even folks that are out there. But I feel that there's a $30 million surplus right now. Seriously, these guys do not want to back Dan Saltzman. I think he's got one of the best ones, and even Nick Fish is a big supporter of this, but the city budget office didn't endorse any of that request. That's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a battle mm-hmm. every year between someone who has mental illness, or being drug addiction, to being sick out on the streets during the summer or the winter. It doesn't matter. People are still going to go to the emergency room because they feel it's a safe place for them to go, but not realizing that it costs a lot of money for someone to go there. Every hospital is not the same. And some hospitals look at that now to see who is really sick and who's not sick. Yeah. It shouldn't matter if someone's sick or not sick. Just be very compassionate about mm-hmm. that somebody is trying to find a spot to be able to rest for a few hours without being harassed by whoever's harassing them at the time. It could be another human being that's homeless or drug addict or police officer or firefighter. But to really look at the cost, it's going to fluctuate. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think we'll ever really get an exact number.
But it seems that there are some cities that are finding alternative, right? Mary, what was this town you were talking about?
Salt Lake City. I think that maybe we would benefit as far as Oregon. Maybe we should talk to the congressman over there and see mm-hmm. how they did it. Because mm-hmm. they sure got their homeless off the street. So mm-hmm. they can do it, we can do it too.
Yeah, I think building houses, small, tiny houses for them as well.
And I think before we jump on that bandwagon, I'm going to be the devil's advocate on that. They've actually scrutinized them just a little bit, because they did find a few folks that were coming into town, and they tried to scrutinize Utah about that, about, oh, you didn't help every homeless person. But they didn't realize that these were travelers that came through Utah, like we have travelers that come through California into Oregon, into Washington, back from Washington to Oregon to California throughout the summertime. So when they tried to scrutinize that, it was really funny. But Utah got on the ball, and they knew what they were talking about. They knew what they needed to do, and they had a governor and the mayors all around in the city saying, this is something we need to do. Mm-hmm. And they start doing it.
Yeah. Do you know if there were actual homeless advocates who were also involved in that process?
There was people from, that's the funny thing. They had people from the churches. They had people who fed. They had people that lived on the streets. They had veterans. They had women. They had full families that participated in these committees and these forums. And it was like, they start getting it done.
Maybe Shasta, now would be a good time to talk a little bit more about the experience for women and mothers, right, and families on the streets. What are the options for safe places to stay? What are some of the services that are lacking from your own analysis perspective?
Some of the services that we're lacking, well, housing, that's for most. So the women side is that there's only two women shelter and the rest are domestic violence. And then we also have Right to Dream too. So that would make a total of three. Some of the women cannot stay inside due to their mental illness, so they choose to be outside. Then we have the family side, which we have three family shelters and then some other ones, and I believe in Washington County. It's really hard to say because no matter what I say, what we're lacking is the housing part. We have a lot of the families that double up to...
And explain to us what that is.
Double up is when, let's use an example, when I families combine to another family. So I have a family, which is a sister who has children, and then I have her sister who has children. So those are, and they combine together. So it's a family, two families to equal one. And a lot of the families are doubling up because it's their backbone, support group. But in society, that most social service agencies can only help one or the other, but we don't have housing to house them all when they all want to be together. The reality is that when it's very hard to house women who are not able to go inside or choose not to go inside for whatever reason.
And what are some of the reasons why they might decide not to go inside?
Rules, regulations. They don't want to follow the rules. They don't like curfew.
Which makes sense. I don't like curfews either.
I mean, it's common sense. We have rules to follow. A lot of them can't follow the rules, whether, you know, they have the mental illness or if they're drugging under the influence. So we have a lot of women who choose to be outside. But it's really hard when some of the shelters, like one of the shelters is only during the winter. So from November to April, they're housed. So April, they go back to the streets. If they can't get into the other shelters, there's a waiting list to get into the other shelters, which could be 60 to 90 days. And the cycle starts all over. So they get indoors. Then their time of length is time. Well, their stay time is extend, or what's that word?
Is longer.
It's no longer. So they use all their time up. So they go back to the streets and start the same cycle. Go inside, go back to the streets, go inside, go back to the streets.
So there's a limit of how long, how many nights they can actually stay in shelters.
That is, well, if it's a warming center, which is only during the winter, they can stay there the whole entire season. But if you're at the other two shelters, there's a length of time,
Right.
Yeah, so they are, in fact, temporary shelters, which is technically the definition of a shelter. And so, hence the huge need for then, okay, you put these family in this temporary shelter, and then where's the housing
that what
they
to
can
do
transition to? Being the... Art, did you have anything you wanted to add around the women or family aspect of things that...
So, like, Shasta got the gist of everything, but sometimes people forget that when a woman gets into a shelter and they have mental illness or drug addiction, they're able to stay because they're low barrier shelters. But then they hire folks, and those folks become case managers and caseworkers and things like that to help that person. And that's why sometimes one person might not get along with the staff. They might not get along with somebody else in there. There might be fights or whatever, or they're constantly going, they want to go in and out, smoke a cigarette or whatever, because that's what they're used to, being free, and they're trying something new. But then that little upgrade from there is the Salvation Army's Women's Safe Shelter. That's a awesome thing that they're doing, but still, once again, it's the same thing, but that now becomes a time limit, and you only get a certain amount of time. I'd like to get more information and talk to them, because I know that they're changing their programs up a little bit, and I'd like to be able to say, hey, I can send somebody that direction, that that's what they need. And then you have like Jean's Place, another awesome place to have. They've changed up some of theirs. Now they have like their top floor, where I think they're renting it out at a small amount, but there's no time limit on that as well.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. So those are three different aspects. But still, no matter how you look at it, with some of those little programs to that almost existing program that has that little bit of housing, still, if I'm to advocate for someone to get that permanent housing, there's still not enough housing to get someone from low barrier shelter and move them up to the next step, to the next step, to the next step, till you finally get them into that. So it's really, really hard. And as Shasta said, the one thing that's lacking, of course, is housing. There's not enough housing.
And then there's that challenge also, once you're in housing, then you need to maintain it, right? You need to be able to pay your rent and meet all of these deadlines. And, you know, I'm sure there's huge barriers to that in the first place, right?
I mean, even if someone was getting their Social Security, there's still not a subsidy there, or if they had an organization that was able to get them in, you know, and they say their rent is $800 and they're able to pay the first last month and maybe the next month. For them still to save that money, they still have to save up 3 months in a row still to keep yourself caught up for the next 2 months. But there's still that, what if? What if my husband stops working? Or what if I lose my Social Security? What if this or that? You never know. There's not a lot of retention money out there. With working with the Homes for Everyone's coordinating board, we put that into ask on a request with the executive committee to say, hey, ask the federal government extra money. We need this extra retention money so folks that are in between jobs, that are losing their jobs on seasonal work or even full-time work, that there's that little bit of money that helps them until that person gets another job or finds another organization to help them with that money.
Okay, let's shift gears for a minute and talk a little bit about law enforcement and city officials, because I think what you do so gracefully, Art, is not only, you know, are you working, you know, hand in hand with the homeless community, but you also are present at those city hall meetings and on different boards. And your voice have a lot of weight, or has come to
become respected
and be seen as something that we need to listen to. So talk a little bit about, you know, your perspective of how you've been working with law enforcement and how you've been working with city officials in this work that you do as a homeless advocate.
It's been pretty nice to be able to, you know, not have to run from the police, but I can run up to the police. So, and say, hey, you know, like, when's the next sweeps happening, or you know, what areas are you going to target, you know, to move people. So it's been enough to ask some questions, but also at the same time they ask, you know, hey, what's going on, is things going okay, we've heard there's been problems, and you know, I'm not snitching on anybody. I'm not telling them the police anything different that they don't already know. But I'm like, so what do you know? So I let them and just nod my head, go, yep, I know the same information. So, and that's the best way to know. But then we get to find out things like, oh, things are happening. But it's been pretty great that we've had a few officers at the coordinating committee to end homelessness speak about some of the things that had gone on. There's a, I think she's Sergeant Sarah Westbrook. She's downtown again, and she's on our coordinating, our Homes for Everyone coordinating board. So we get to hear like some of the things that are happening within the community, and they're listening to what we're talking about, like where we need funding, that where homeless folks are and need to get certain people there and to help out. So it's been a pretty good collaboration with being on these committees and sitting there and listening to them as well, stating that, you know, hey, we've had a height of this, or we find out there's more drugs in the city and stuff like that. So talk to folks, you know, if they are using, make sure, you know, they're still being conscious, because that's their lifestyle. You know, if someone's going to use, I'm going to support them when they say, hey, I'm ready to be done. Okay, let's go to treatment. Let's get you healthy. Let's get things like that. But also at the same time, being able to work with them and say, hey, you know, looking for somebody. Let's see if we can find them. But, you know, some people get mad because I talk to them, but that's just me. I've got to make that rapport with them, because I'm trying to do something in my community, and they're trying to enforce their rules in my community. So we gotta bump heads. We gotta bump heads.
For sure.
So how can, when somebody does bump heads with a city official or a law enforcement officer, how do they make a complaint?
Her name is Irene. You can go to City Hall. And there's been a lot of different folks within the city that help folks. There's a gentleman by the name of Wade Barner. He's with an organization called HAHA, and he had helped people fill those out and get them to the right people to make the complaints. There's been multiple people at Sisters of the Road Cafe as well that have sat down with people and filled them out as well. I'm going to throw another friend of mine under the bus, preacher Joe Freedom, my friend Jose. He also, at the same time, he did a lot of advocacy work across the street in the parks from City Hall. And anytime people had complaints, he'd help them out. A couple friends of ours that moved to San Diego, and she went back to work, Nye and Liberty. They did a Frontline Network, a group that I'm with and on, and they did a lot of work here, but it was also at the same time, they seen complaints and things, they help folks fill them out and find them where they can go. But also at the same time, it was the best way to find out who was having problems with the police. It was able to bring people together, and that's how a lot of the anonymous folks came together. We started doing Operation Winter Coat, Operation Summer's coming soon, you know, so we have also, me and Shasta has been part of that, and, you know, have fed folks, you know, with another friend of ours, Jason, that, you know, he's another big part that has done some things with us, or on some committees with us, and it's just been enough to where you want to make that complaint, there's enough people out there that now know how to do it, or where to get that information. But still, the process is still pretty long. You still got to wait and stuff like that, and it's the usual. You need your witnesses, you need your evidence and things like that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, so City Hall sounds, or Sisters of the Road also, you said, seem like two very central places where people can get forms and also get some help, support,
and the same with Street Roots, I think.
And Street Roots,
yep. Okay. Over at Street Roots, yeah. You can go there also and get one.
Great. Well, you're listening to Bread and Roses. We have Art and Shasta in the studio with us tonight. I'm with Mary Polster-Wade, and we are having a conversation about homeless leadership, what they do as freelance homeless advocates. We're going to take a short musical break and listen to Arrested Development. This is Mr. Wendell.
A big deal to you. Be strong, serve God only. Know that if you do, beautiful heaven awaits. Asked to pull my rope for the first time. I saw a man with no clothes, no money, no plate, Mr. Wendell. Asked his name. No one ever knew his name, cause he's a no one. Never thought twice about spending on an old bum until I had the chance to really get to know one. Now that I know him, to give him money isn't charity. He gives me some knowledge, I buy him some shoes. And to think blacks spend all their money on big colleges, still most of y'all come out confused. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell. Go ahead, Mr. Wynn. Mr. Wendell has freedom, a free that you and I think is dumb. Free to be without the worries of a quick to this society, for Mr. Wendell's a bum. His only worries are sickness and an occasional harassment by the police in their chase. Uncivilized, we call him, but I just saw him eat off the food we waste. Civilization, are we really civilized? Yes or no? Who are we to judge when thousands of innocent men can be brutally enslaved or killed over a racist grudge? Mr. Wendell has tried to warn us about our ways, but we don't hear him talk. Is it his fault when we've gone too far, and we got too far, cause on him we've walked. Mr. Wendell, a man, a human in flesh, but not by law. I feed you dignity to stand with pride, realize that all in all, you stand tall. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell.
Listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo.
And I am Mary Polster-Wade.
And we have Art and Shasta in the studio with us this evening. We've been talking about the very impressive work that they have been doing, you know, behind the scene, because as we kind of established tonight, there's just some kind of works. We can give them the fancy names that we want. They're still dirty and they have to be done.
Right.
So thank you for doing the dirty work.
Mm-hmm. So, talk about homeless leadership in Portland and like across the country. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is to assume that because people are homeless, then they're unproductive members of society. And talk about the actions homeless people take every day to protect their rights, make sure their needs are met, things like that.
I was recently in a meeting with a very nice lady from Washington, D.C., and I heard a gentleman say that homelessness is not a 9-to-5 job. It's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week epidemic.
Hmm.
So to ask that question is, it's still an epidemic. It's still hard for someone to have to find a safe place to sleep. Yes, we have some shelters. Yes, we have a rest area. Yes, we have a few family shelters or the possibility on getting into one of the missions. But still, it's really hard for someone to fathom what's next. Hmm. What are they going to do next? Are they looking for their next meal at 2 a.m.? Or are they looking for their next drug use at 2 a.m.? Or are they looking for their family member at 2 a.m. Hmm. to go to sleep, to be safe, their security blanket? It's people like me and Shasta, and really there's a group of us, and you might not know it, but a lot of people do it. People do stop. People will give money to somebody. May not be a lot, but it is something, you know, like the song, Mr. Window. You know, mm-hmm. they say he's a bum. Well, we're all bums one way or another, or was a bum one way or another. But we got up, you know, brushed ourselves off and go and keep going every day. I get a lot of people that tell me, like, hey, you're losing a lot of weight. You look like you're sick. Because, like I said, homelessness isn't a 9-to-5 job. I have a 9-to-5 job I can go to, but I still know that I'm going to come back out on the streets. I'm going to help as many people as I can, from a cigarette to a dollar to food, or sending them to Shasta to have a cup of coffee because they need a different conversation mm-hmm. than me, because I talk their ear off, and I'll send them to Shasta, be like, go over there, at least you won't talk much, you know.
She listens.
But, yeah.
I do. But, she's good at it.
But that's the thing, because sometimes I get those folks that want me to just talk to them and give them every resource. Mm-hmm. But then there's those that just need to talk, and she can listen so well and pull all the pinpointed things with a 20-minute conversation, and sometimes a 5-minute conversation. Then it's like, hey, mm-hmm. aren't they looking for this? Mm-hmm. Boom, here we go. We got them a whole list. What do you want to start on first? And it's just a community working with a community.
Yeah.
You know, like I have all these little sayings and stuff like that, but it's really that human being helping another human being that has mm-hmm. you know, a trust in someone that has compassion for them and willing to teach them something different, you know, that they're not used to. It doesn't matter what your upbringing is, and it doesn't matter if you've had money or not had money. You're still a human being. You should still be treated like that. And how do you function? How can you function out here? Mm-hmm. Well, here's where you can get food. This is where you can safely stay, or if you're mm-hmm. on the streets, here's another safety place to sleep. It just depends. It's sometimes harder on others, and we've seen it lately. We've seen a lot more elderly folks coming into town, and it hasn't been like that for at least about 5 or 6 years. So it's like, who can we talk to? We used to have some ins with some of the folks with the 55 and older in housing and stuff like that, but now it's no longer there. So it's like trying to meet somebody new, mm-hmm. you know, to see how we can help folks like that. But it's still the same thing. Find them a right spot to sleep, food, you know, and see what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, Shasta, I know, anything to add on? I think that, you know, for me, the piece that's so critical about the work that you do is, but also the work that others do, right, is, again, that idea that, you know, you're just, like, out there as a homeless person, as, you know, almost trash. That's pretty much how I feel society treats homeless folks. And what you are bringing to our attention tonight, first of all, is the fact that it can happen to everybody, that, you know, the cycle, once it starts, it's really hard to get out of, but also that the homeless community has come together and has actually, I think that Right to Dream 2, Right to Survive, and Ibrahim and his team are doing incredible work. And I know that there's lots of other groups all across the country that are working, you know, the day-to-day, like you guys are doing, to try to alleviate some of the difficulties that people are facing.
Yes.
You asked that question because that was your question, Mary.
And I'd like to ask this to Shasta.
Because we know his answer.
We know your answer, right.
We'll still share your answer. It's a good one.
I want to know what you feel that any just a person walking down the street can do to help somebody who's homeless. Is it give them a meal? Is it ask them to talk to you about their story? What is one thing that I can do when I see somebody who's homeless to help them out?
Well, what I do is even I walk by and smile and say hi. And then a lot of people will engage in the conversation. And it's back to, once again, listening. That person just might need that 1 second to have a talk. It could be the most randomest thing. Mm-hmm. It could be about your shoes. It could be about how you look today. But it's that time to take and just to listen for that 1 second.
Correct.
You don't have to give them money. You don't have to give them food. Just smiling and asking how their day is. That's the most rewarding thing to do.
All right.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay, Art, share yours now.
Like mine, like I had said, you know, mine's the same thing. But it's sometimes I wanna get that person to get up from where they're at.
Yeah.
I don't know if they sat there for a long period of time. And it was funny, after we spoke last week and stuff, and I left here, and I walked over to the bus, and there was a guy sitting there, and I walked him over to the bar, and I bought him a beer, because that's what he wanted. I said, do you want food or anything? He goes, no, I just need a beer. And I walked him over there and gave him a beer. We sat there. I said, I got 15 minutes before my bus comes. He goes, give me 10. And that's all it took. You know, it's if I have it in my pocket and I can give it, that's one thing. But and that's one thing that I've learned from Shasta is actually just, you don't have to always give them everything. It may just be that conversation. So I've got to sit back now and just like listen to the conversation and ask what their wants and needs are. And I tell them, hey, you can meet me over here if you're really true to wanting to look for housing or looking to do something better for yourself. So, you know, I give them a location. I give them my phone number, you know. Sometimes I'll give her number out. We haven't done it much lately because it's always been a lot of the same people that we've seen on a constant basis, and they talk to us. We're getting a little bit more out. It's starting to become summertime, so we're starting to walk a little bit more around, and it's pretty funny because we do this and we stop and say hi, you know, and normally I'll just walk past that normal person and just say hi, but with her it's been just have that conversation and just see where it goes from there.
She's having a good impact on you, I think.
Yeah, she's changed the way I've seen things.
Yeah, this is really good. This is really good. I think you guys are like a really well-functioning team. You know, being able to learn from each other is one of the biggest things.
Except for he talks too much.
And I'm trying to pull her out of her shell.
Well, I think both of you guys are doing great tonight. So as we wrap up, you know, it's been already an hour. Let's, you know, if you would just bring back kind of this whole conversation and talk about what's so important to have the homeless community, homeless folks, be part of planning for the solutions that are supposed to bring, you know, and to, you know, whatever this big problem they want to call a homelessness.
Rock, paper, scissors. Okay, so I got stuck. Okay, once again, you're going to hear me. No.
We always
look at it, and I've been doing this for so long, so I try to put myself on so many different committees, and being that community member on all these ones over and over and over, and then, you know, meeting Shasta, meeting Jason, meeting Wade, meeting Ibrahim, meeting, you know, all these different, Leo Rhodes and Israel Bear, all these different people that I've been able to sit on a different one, and we've all been from the community one way or another. We've done so many different things. So it's been awesome to be on there. But then when being asked, you know, to be on certain committees, sometimes it feels like I'm the token on certain committees because I'm the only one that's from the community, and it's like, how do we find more community engagement? So I've talked to Shasta, and Shasta's all like, well, just start talking to people. And I'm like, okay, I'm talking to you. And so I've gotten her, I've coaxed her into, you know, saying, no, let's do this together. You know, even though we do a lot of things together, I want to stop being that only community member. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I get that grief of, oh, men shouldn't talk about women's services and things like that. But I've been around doing this mm-hmm. so long, and I went after three different mayors to keep the women's shelter mm-hmm. open longer each time, and saying, hey, yeah, City Hall, safe place. Mm-hmm. Come down tonight. I'll be there. You know, we can sleep. Mm-hmm. But it's enough to where I look at it. And somebody put it into perspective to her and said, this is why you should be on there, because yeah. you come from the family in mm-hmm. the women's shelter.
Yeah.
You come with the women's aspect and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she just became the new executive director with JOIN, and that's Shannon Singleton. And she's been very influential and mentor, I think, for mm-hmm. both of us,
yeah.
you know.
Shasta, what would you say to someone like wanting to, you know, maybe hesitating to be an advocate? Because you were too. You
good
said,
question.
I'm,
good question.
I'm so shy. I don't know if I can.
It's really hard because a lot of people out here don't have voices, and mm. I share my experience with them because when I first started, I am the quiet one, still is. I don't like to speak a lot. I like to listen, and I like to observe and gasp the information, and then I will ponder it off to art. Mm. So, I mean, if I can share my experience with them, maybe the voice that mm. we can trickle on down the line. I mean, I can show them videos.
Yeah. Well, thank you, both of you, for being on Bread and Resist tonight, and thank you again for the wonderful, tremendous work you do out there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Bread and Roses brings you feminist news and public affairs every Friday night at 6 p.m. Like us on Facebook and check us out on the web at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. Tune in next week. Ashley and Adrian will host some youth and adults to talk about the second annual Healthy Breakup Summit happening the following Saturday, as well as some folks from All Hands Raised, who will talk about educational equity. Have a great day.